Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. As the Premier League season draws to a thrilling close, we have a lot to cover this week. With first up, we're going to dive into Chelsea's revitalization and resurgence in the league. We'll also discuss the excitement of another team joining the Premier League from the Championship and the impact it could have on the landscape of English football. But that's not all. Get ready for the Erling Haaland revenge tour as he reasserts his dominance at the top of the scoring charts from this weekend's matchup. Join us as we navigate through the twists and turns of the Premier League final stretch with your three favorite co-hosts, James, Kyle, and Sean on the EPL State of Mind. Of course, first and foremost, it's sad to say we have our two last games. Some teams have three, but two last weeks coming to a close here at the English Premier League. We would like to thank all the listeners at the start of this episode for their continuing support and listening throughout the entirety of the podcast season, but we're not quite dead yet. And with that, I appreciate you boys being back on for another week. So Kyle and Sean, how are we doing? Sean, how are you feeling this week?
Good, man. I can't complain. Liverpool's not shit anymore, so that always is good for my overall thoughts on the Premier League and my outlook on life.
Yeah, it's incredible how many rain clouds go away after multiple losses or just disappointing outings, and you have one really good one. It's like, shit, that's how it used to feel. I wish I could say the same for you, Kyle, but I think you guys haven't lost since 2002, so I think that makes sense a lot for Manchester City. But how are you doing this week, Kyle?
I'm doing well. World class from Pep Guardiola, strategically losing the Champions League so he can focus on the Premier League. And it shows, you know, one of the first games back with, you know, that lingering cloud of Champions League. I know you're new to that, James, but we've been dealing with that for many years. So to get that out of us, that's nice. But I'm excited. Haaland's back on the score sheet. Foden looks unbelievable right now. Premier League race is coming to it. And I mean, for those who like to watch the top of the league, check out the bottom of the league. It's going to be a hell of a finish for the relegation battle.
Yeah, we have the top and the bottom with the last two, three games are going to be really intense and really close to look at. But some of the really exciting things that happened this week off the pitch and on the pitch are covered here in our first segment as per usual. And that's the hot news. So one of the most miraculous stories that we have on hot news this year is the rise of Ipswich Town, promoted to the Premier League, back-to-back promotions into the Championship, and now the Premier League. Sean, take us through the miraculous story that is Ipswich.
Yeah, it really, like you said, miraculous is a really good adjective to describe what's happened at Ipswich over the last two or three seasons. They were down in League One just this time last year, were promoted at a historic rate, or not even at a historic rate. They got second place in League One, came up to the Championship, and just, again, back-to-back promotions. It's absolutely remarkable. It brings the Tractor Boys back to the Premier League for the first time since 2002. The Tractor Boys, by the way, might be the best nickname of any football club in the EFL. I love that one. But this is a historic club. They have, you know, history dating back to the 1960s under Alf Ramsey, who was the manager for the 1966 England team. He won the league title with Ipswich Town. And then Sir Bobby Robson, who also was a future England manager, won the FA Cup and the UEFA Cup in the late 70s and early 80s with Ipswich. But now they're led by manager Kieran McKenna, kind of made his bones in the Tottenham youth system. And then Manchester United was under Mauricio Pochettino, Antonio Conte, Jose Mourinho. He's taken a little bit of all three. I would say he plays most similar to Mauricio Pochettino, but since he's took over, Ipswich have just completely skyrocketed up the table and now into the Premier League. Back-to-back promotions for the first time since Southampton did it in 2010, and that was mostly due to a lot of money that was pumped into Southampton. This is pretty much just organic. They did have new ownership take over about 5 years ago, but it's not like they've pumped in a ton of money. It's more so just been, you know, the development of the players and the coaching style that McKenna's put in place. To put their achievement into perspective, last year in League One, I think they had the second highest transfer spend. This year, they were somewhere around mid-table. And, you know, from a transfer market perspective, I know you like to use transfermarket.com stats. They were ranked 16th. In terms of market value in the EFL Championship at 50.5 million euros. That's less than half of the club values of places like Leeds, Southampton, and Hull City, who all missed out on automatic promotion, which switch, which is a definite tongue twister one. It really is, like I said, a remarkable achievement. Just a quick couple of notes on them. So their key player is Leif Davis. He plays left back, kind of more of that modern inverted fullback position, where he drops into midfield and pulls the strings from deep. He leads the EFL championship in assists with 18. And then another key player for them is Omari Hutchinson, who's on loan from Chelsea, but has already kind of indicated that he'd prefer to either go back to Ipswich on loan again or potentially make the deal permanent. Obviously, they'll have an influx of cash. Will certainly be an interesting team to watch going forward. They're not a team that we've seen. Obviously, it's been over 22 years since they've been back in the Prem. It's not your Leicester City or your Southamptons or your Norwich, your West Broms, teams that we've come accustomed to seeing and have a lot of proven Premier League talent. So it certainly will be interesting to see what they do this summer. They will definitely need to invest, I would say, in the spine of that team if they want to stay up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that they can learn from is Burnley, or who they can learn from is Burnley, right? Because Burnley had a similar promotion last year where they weren't as dominant. Ipswiches weren't as dominant as Burnley were, but Burnley's real success came from the hands of a lot of loanees. And as soon as they lost those loanees, you see exactly where Burnley is right now. So in order to keep that moving, you have to be able to kind of almost similarly within financial fair play rules, do what Nottingham Forest did, just not illegally. When Forest was promoted, they had an influx of cash that they just went out and bought essentially two new rosters completely. You're able to field two teams with the amount of people they brought in. So Ipswich, my recommendation was to you is to not be too stingy with that cost right away. But of course, you know, you can look at a team like Luton Town, who kind of had the opposite of that. They haven't spent much. They have been fighting to stay afloat. And, you know, we were kind of hoping they would, because then they would get a lot of cash from that. But we'll see how they are to do here. But always an exciting time when a team we haven't seen in a while gets back up. As far as more exciting news and the return to the Premier League, we have the coaching side of things, where Julian Lopetegui has been hired to replace David Moyes at West Ham, and the mutual consent to part ways after this season for David and the Hammers came out today. Was it today or yesterday that this
came
out?
I think it was today.
And this came after an absolute bashing this weekend from Chelsea. So absurd, in my opinion, but we'll see how that goes. But why don't you, Sean, take us through Lopetegui, his return since playing or being in the Premier League with the Wolves last season.
Yep, absolutely. Like you said, a familiar face. He took over Wolves last year when they were bottom of the table and led them to a 13th place finish in the league. He was appointed in mid-November and had 10 victories in his 27 matches. They ended up in, like I said, in 13th, 8 points clear of relegation, which is an impressive turnaround for sure. He did leave about 6 days before this season started due to Wolves' financial problems and basically not getting the level of investment that he wanted. They essentially had no choice. They would have broken FFP had they met his demands. Obviously, we've discussed several times how good Gary O'Neill has been stepping into that role at Wolverhampton. But certainly a very talented coach. His hiring means that there'll be four Premier League managers from the Basque Country in Spain, which is a place of just 2 million residents, between Arteta, Unai Emery, Edoni Iriola, and Julian Lopetegui. It's pretty remarkable that four managers from really a small region, it's basically less than the size of Bergen and Morris County combined, now has four managers in the Premier League. I think that's pretty insane. Could have been five if Xabi Alonso opted to come to the Prem, but obviously we talked about him staying at Leverkusen. Previous stops before Wolves, he was at Sevilla, helped them lift the Europa League and also get top four three straight seasons. He was also briefly the Real Madrid manager for about 4 months. That did not go quite well. He had six wins, six losses, and two draws before he was sacked. And then before that, he was the manager of the Spanish national team. From a style of play standpoint, it'll be very different from how West Ham lines up now with their 4-5-1, very much on a counter-attacking emphasis. He's more known for a 4-3-3, known for being very deliberate and patient in build-up and playing a mid-block versus where West Ham likes to sit deep, especially against the top teams, and then hit teams on the counter. So I expect a lot of turnover in terms of the overall talent and squad within West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, the best part about his return to the Premier League is we kind of have a taste of what he was able to bring with the Wolves two seasons ago, or last season, really. And, you know, it wasn't bad. It was pretty solid. We thought that maybe at the beginning of the season that they were going to run into a bit of issues with the lack of spending there is for the Wolves. But now maybe being able to do that with West Ham, since they have had a massive sell of Declan Rice last season over the summer to Arsenal, they still have those funds to get. We were kind of talking about this offline briefly before the podcast, but West Ham most likely are going to lose a few big names based off of how they have been performing as of late. You still have Mohamed Kudus, who has a release clause in his contract. He came to West Ham to play some European soccer. West Ham's now out of European soccer. Jared Bowen, who is, you know, one of the staples over West Ham, we don't really see him leaving. But you have a couple people from the roster that might not want to stick around for regular Premier League that have the talent, like Mohamed Kudus, to go ahead and play soccer at a European level. So, you know, who knows what other funds Lupitegui will be able to get from West Ham in this offseason. As far as the exit or the era of the end of David Moyes, to me, this felt inevitable this season, especially with where they have been going from positional wise in the table. Just a acceptance of mid to lower mid table action from Moises. You know, he joined in December of 2019 when the Irons were in 17th place at the time and did lead them to a top 10 finish in 10th place. But the highest he's ever led the Hammers to is a 6th place finish in the 2020-2021 season. As of today in the English Premier League, Moises has 64 wins, which is a 37.9 win percentage. He's given the Hammers opportunity to score 248 goals, and he has an average of 1.4 points per match. This is a crazy stat that I saw, though. Moises, and I'll say it a little bit in a second, but Moises has 10 English Premier League Manager of the Month awards, but none of them are with the Hammers. Crazy to me, a coach who had his caliber at the beginning of his coaching career to enter to a mid-of-the-table team to not even have one out of the entirety time, the 5 years that he's been essentially the coach there. So the only thing that he has really won with Irons, and we got to witness it last year with Declan Rice, was the Conference League Championship. So they were able to raise that trophy, and in my opinion, that is what saved him from losing his job at the end of last season. In other words, they finished, I believe, like 14th or 13th in the table last year. Nothing to write home to mom and dad about. As far as that goes, I think we will see the return of Moyes somewhere else. He is only 61 years of age, and he has the Rolodex. He has a history on where he was used to coach, and some larger clubs that you might not know, or some of the listeners might know, that he managed was Everton, which he led them to their first, I believe, Champions League berth. And then he's also coached Manchester United and Real Sociedad. So some big names on that roster are on his resume. So I would not be surprised if Moyes is returned. With that being said, Kyle, where would you rate Moises' success at West Ham since his appointment in 2019?
David Moyes. I would probably give him like a 7 to 8. You know, he takes over, and the 3 years before he takes over, they finished 11th, 13th, and 10th. So, I mean, they're middle to middle bottom of the table before he takes over. The year he took over was clearly a transitional phase. They actually finished in 16th, the worst finish they've had in the last 15 or so years. But you look at what he's done after he starts to play with their team. He then finishes 6th, 7th. You said 14th. I mean, it happens. Have a bad season. But now they're still in the top 10 this year. So 3 out of 4 top 10 finishes after he's taken over from a team that had 0 in their previous 4 years. So I think it's a success. I mean, he didn't have, you know, weapons like Cristiano Ronaldo and Salah and Haaland to play with. So he's making it work with the little he has. I think it's a huge success. I personally hope he goes to a team that is struggling, because I feel like he can take a struggling team and make them, I don't want to say mediocre, but at least fighting to stay in the top half of the table, not for relegation at that point. You know, you toss him down to a team like Everton, somewhere like that, I fully expect to see them finishing middle of the table that season. So I think he's a fine coach, no issues with him. He plays safe, and I'm okay with that. Yeah, I think 7.5.
Yep. I think the counter attacking style football, like Sean mentioned, would be a good fit at one of the relegation side teams, possibly at a lower side of the table, to try to fight for their right to stay up. All right. Well, that's all we got for hot news. You know, always exciting when a new team gets promoted, new coaching comes into the Premiership, or the Premier League rather. So exciting to see what is going to come of that. Something about teams staying up and fighting for their right to stay. Nottingham Forest, they have done themselves a good service this weekend. They beat Sheffield United 3-1 with an XG of 1.49 to Sheffield United's 2.27. So doesn't always tell the whole side of the story, but Sean, why don't you take us through the trees and their massive 3 points at Bramall Lane this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, I think it's been a little bit of a switch up for them. Of late, they've kind of dominated the XG game, but not gotten the result. Now the shoe is on the other foot. And once again, by the way, the game starts off with Chris Wood missing another big chance. I swear he might have his life savings on Nottingham Forest to go down, because he has been so bad in front of goal of late. It's been absolutely insane. But, you know, Callum Hudson-Odoi picked him up with a brace, and they also had a header from Ryan Yates, the captain, to deliver the victory in this one. It's a huge 3 points for Nottingham Forest. Puts them 3 points clear of the relegation zone with just two games to go. They're also in good shape from a goal differential standpoint, as long as they don't get blown out in their final two. And obviously, Burnley now has to win to stay up both their games. And then Luton obviously needs to win at least one and get a draw on the other game. But I want to talk about Sheffield United just quickly. They have now conceded 100 goals on the season. Just the second team to ever do that in the Premier League era. The first team to do it was Swindon Town back in 1993-94. That's when the seasons were 42 games long, so an extra 4 games. That is outrageous how bad they are defensively. And for context, Luton Town, who's 19th in goals allowed, is at 78 goals conceded. So it's a difference of 22 goals. They are miserable. What's the word you like to use, Kyle, for teams at this level?
Feathers.
The feathers.
They're absolute feathers. Tar and feathers. it's a Revolutionary War crime watching them on a weekly basis.
The worst goal difference last year during the season, the 2022-2023 season, was minus 37, and the worst amount of goals against was 78, and that was Leeds. I mean, this is miles below the sea level if you're Sheffield United. It's abysmal. So great point.
They're actually in danger of breaking the worst goal differential record, which was Derby County. I think they had minus 69, and currently Sheffield United are at minus 65. So it's, depending on their results in the last two games, it could even get worse. They could set even more historical records for the wrong reasons.
That's hysterical. They're almost double of last season's goal difference. That's absolutely absurd. And I mean, to have 3 wins and 26 losses, oh man, that's brutal. I mean, when you get promoted and you're just not a very good team, you know you're going to get the shit kicked out of you. But sometimes, what would you guys rather be? Would you rather stay in the Championship and like fight to finish top two, top three? Or would you rather be in the Premier League and getting your shit rocked every week?
I've actually talked with somebody who is a Southampton fan who's kind of been through that. And he said it's way more fun to be in the Championship and be good and get to the playoffs and lose than to be in the Premier League every week and just get your teeth kicked in majority of the time. I don't know, Kyle, how do you feel about that?
I mean, you guys know how I feel. You asked me today why I play Rocket League over FIFA. I like winning. I play 12-year-olds. It's as simple as that, you know. But it's got to be. But yeah, it's got to be similar. Like, I mean, you don't want to be, you know, hand on your head walking into the tunnel losing 30 games in a season. Yeah. You know, give it to your fans, give it to yourself, boost your mentality, get better, train harder, and get to the prem when you can fight.
Yeah, it's brutal. I, as a winner's mentality, I don't think I would be able to do it. I mean, just playing in a 7v7 Hoboken men's league, I've been on the season where we've gone undefeated have gone where we've won one game, and those are like for nothing. That's 20-minute halves. My lungs can barely take it anymore, but I don't even want to participate in those games if we're getting our shit rocked every week. So it's I'm at that level. Yeah, it's great. You're in the Premier League. You got some extra coin. But that's why everyone yo-yos a lot, right? Because you do so well in the championship, then you get your shit rocked, you go back down to the championship, but you have some fun, so you'll probably come back up to the Premier League. And then you get a lucky story like Nottingham Forest or Brentford. Every once in a while, you'll stay up for 2-3 seasons. Fulham, this was their second time in a couple of years actually not yo-yoing, right? So they've stayed up for 2 seasons in a row, and now it looks like they're going to stay up for a third. So it's intense. The Premier League is definitely a hard spot to stay up if you have, like Sean pointed out, the $50 million that is Ipswich for their entirety of their right, their market value. That's not even half. It's roughly half of what Declan Rice's transfer fee was, right? One person, the whole team. So it's difficult, of course, but why we digress. Hopefully we'll see some more teams that come up next year, stay up again. But as far as it goes from there, we can talk about Chelsea kicking the shit out of West Ham 5-0. Chelsea had a 4.22 goal expected goals to West Ham's 0.88. So, Kyle, where has this team been all year? They beat Tottenham 2-0 midweek, which was my lock of the week because I thought Tottenham, and you agreed with me, that Tottenham is just on a completely different scale, or at least we thought. But now we're here, and the Blues follow up with a walloping of the Hammers at Stamford Bridge. Is it just because it's at Stamford Bridge? What's going on with these guys?
I'm not sure what's going on, but something's clicked. I mean, this was the most shots on target they've had all season. They finished with 14 shots on target. Unbelievable. They've only had two games this season with more total shots against Man U and Brentford. They finished with 28 and they had 25 in this game. But whatever they're doing is working. I think it's a big factor onto Cole Palmer. Just having him on the field makes a difference. But for this specific game, my hat tips to Madueke. He played out of his mind and he was hungry. I mean, before he scored his goal, I think it was 5 minutes before, he's the biggest workhorse on the field. He's running up. He's taking shots. He had barely missed a shot 5 minutes before, and you could see how furious he was. So it's not surprising to know that he got his off of a very nice header back across the box. He was just in the right position at the right time. But yeah, I mean, it was an absolute slaughter, like you mentioned, James. They led every single category other than yellow cards, which in my mind is a big category. You do want to win that at the end of the day, but it is what it is. It was a shit performance from West Ham. I will say that they're in ninth place currently. They have nothing to fight for other than, as James mentioned earlier when we were just talking, they need to fight for their coin. You know, you get paid out depending on where you finish in the Premier League. And right now it's, hey, either finish in 10th or 11th or finish in 8th or 9th. That's their scenario. So it's, you know, why fight too hard? Don't risk the massive injuries, but you still got to play. And they got a hard game coming up this weekend against Luton at home. So, you know, watch out for that. But yeah, I think this is a big shout out to Chelsea coming back. That's all I have to say. You guys mentioned that Enzo Fernandez is not in the game right now. And since his departure for the games that he missed, Chelsea seemed to be elevated to a different standard where they're winning games without Enzo Fernandez. But he's a great player, in my opinion. So I'm not going to blame him. It's you watch him play. It's not like errors are happening. It's just miscommunication. It's this, that. I think this is a great, great last 2 weeks for Chelsea. And James, I'm sorry. Your lock of the week was spot on, in my opinion. I bet it. I lost money on it. I don't understand how Tottenham fall head over heels to Chelsea.
Yeah.
But it happened.
Yep. It's tough. And we'll do it in the rapid kicks, how Tottenham kind of had some type of little revitalization in the second half against Liverpool. But I was expecting that team, that Tottenham team, to show up against Chelsea a little bit motivated, but they just kind of laid out for them too. But insane. Another crazy game and a team that's kind of riding right on the coattails of Chelsea with this recent surgence of form is unfortunately one of Sean's now not favorite, but still semi-favorite. He's more Jekyll Hyde. He's in between two bodies, between two worlds, doesn't know what to figure out, doesn't know who to root for, and that is Crystal Palace and the Silky Smooth Ballers versus Manchester United. Crystal Palace scored 4 in this game with an XG of 1.63, and Manchester United put up a goose egg with expected goals of 0.35. So, Sean, take us through this game a little bit, and then we'll talk about Crystal Palace and Manchester United as a whole and a team, but talk to us about this walloping.
Yeah, man, just really, I don't know what Oliver Glasner put in the drinks of these guys since he took over in February, but they looked like prime Brazil in this game. It looked like Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Kaká were all out on the pitch, especially that front three of Mateta, Eze, and Olise were outstanding. It started off with Michael Olise on a great individual run and finish into the bottom corner. They do the Premier League double over Manchester United for the first time ever in the history of the club. They've been playing since 1922. They've never done the double over Manchester United. It's their biggest win over Manchester United since 1972. It's just an absolutely ridiculous run of results for Palace since Glasner took over. They have 5 wins, 1 loss, and 1 draw in that time frame, and in their last 5 games, they have 4 wins and 1 draw. They've been sensational. I think the other guy you have to talk about when you talk about Palace right now is Jean-Philippe Mateta. His 6th goal in his last 6 matches, and his goal was beautiful as well. I think pretty much every goal they scored in this game was sick. Eze was taking back heels, was doing free kicks with back heels and no looks. Like, they were just taking the piss, honestly. And my biggest takeaway in this game is, I think it's time for Casemiro to move on. He was pretty much at fault for the first goal. He did score, quote, in this game, but ended up ruled offside. But he just does not have the legs to play with the pace that the Premier League's at anymore. I don't know what United can do, because they pay him so much money, and I don't know if anyone's going to be stupid enough to take on that contract, but I just don't think he's got enough to play at this level anymore. He looked terrible in this game, and frankly, hasn't really had a good season at any point this year.
No, I mean, we said it a couple episodes ago. I think the best thing that Casemiro did for Manchester United was get injured earlier in the season so Kobbie Mainoo could be discovered as a consistent starting 11 participant. But I mean, we have friends on all different spectrums that are a Manchester United fan, and I can just hear them all rallying behind Manchester United on this one, because Ian, if you look at,
suck it, Ian.
Wow.
If you look at this starting 11 that Manchester United put up, you can't do anything but feel bad for the fan base. I mean, you have Casemiro, noted it. Casemiro is playing at center back. He is the captain of this Manchester United at center back, next to Johnny Evans, who was alive when the Black Pearl was sailing across the sea. I mean, this is crazy. That duo is actually insane. And then you have Christian Eriksen, who has literally lived and died twice, that is now on the pitch still for these. I mean, and you have Mason Mount as the number 10. Crap, he started 5 times because of injury. So sure, he hasn't come into form or what they expected to have as form. But let's just be real. Like, he's not going to do it now in the last 3 games of the season. And you have Hoyland, who, you know, is a bright spot. And you have Garnacho, who's probably the best player on that field. And Garnacho's what, 20, 21 years old?
Well, James.
Not even, he's probably 20.
Tell him about the bench. I mean,
the bench, I couldn't even tell you who the bench players are, because I've never seen these names before. You have Amrabat, who we've talked about was probably the biggest flop of the season, other than maybe Brennan Johnson, who we talked about offline as far as disappointments coming in for transfers. You have an Ethan Wheatley. You have an Alte Bayandir, a Harry Amis, Lewis Jackson, Toby Collier, Tom Heaton. I've never heard of these kids.
Wait, hold on. I need you to pronounce number 75's name right now. Please 75. Pronounce 75 on
the screen. I skipped.
Thank you for saying something, Sean.
I skipped Habib Ogunye on purpose. Not bad. Not
pretty
bad.
Good. Better than I expected.
Yep. So, I mean, like,
good work, Habib.
Let's see. What's he is? He's 18 years old. He was born in 2005. His market value is $250,000. I mean, this is what Manchester United is working with right now. I don't feel bad for Erik ten Hag. I feel bad for the fan base. But on the other side of this coin, you kind of mentioned already for Crystal Palace, what a time it must be. And we say it every single time. But Eze and Olise need to somehow be a package deal everywhere they go, because these two together, it's fireworks. The last time Eze, Mateta, and Olise were in the starting lineup, it was against West Ham, and they won 5-2. Coincidence? I think not. And they happened to beat they also happened to beat Liverpool 1-0 at Anfield when these three were on the pitch together. I mean, these three, and it helps, like you said, nailed the nail on the head. Mateta has been in crazy form. Crystal Palace has been crazy form. They're only second place behind Man City in the last five matches with a goal difference of 10. And just for reference, their current overall goal difference is -8. They have scored more than 25% of their season goals in the last five matches. Absolutely insane. And a lot of it's due to the trio of Eze, Mateta, and Olise. You know, when they lost Zaha to Galatasaray, everyone thought that, you know, who's going to fill the void? One person wasn't going to do it. It's these three. And unfortunately, we can only imagine where Crystal Palace could be if these three were more, you know, reliable on participating and being, you know, fully fit for the entirety of the season. But we'll see.
Yeah, I just hope next year it's possible that they keep them together, just at least for the first half of the season. I think it's going to be tough to keep Olise in particular. There was so much interest in him from both United and Chelsea in last year's summer window. But if they can, I think they could potentially push into that top seven, top eight conversation. I think it's going to be really tough. Obviously, United, Newcastle, Chelsea should all be better than they were this year. Obviously, you know, Villa is not going anywhere, nor is, you know, Liverpool, Arsenal, or City. But I think they could potentially, you know, get in that conversation for the seventh place, you know, Europa Conference League spot, maybe go on a run in one of the cups, because I think that really they are a difficult opposition since Glasner took over.
Yeah, especially at Selhurst Park, too. Not an easy place to go to. If you can nail down your games at home and win a couple of those kind of strange away games, you're setting yourself up for a solid finish. And it's a funny joke, but we always say death taxes and Crystal Palace finishing in 11th or 12th place. They still have an opportunity to do that. they're only 3 points off of Wolves in 12th, so they still have the opportunity. But really exciting stuff if you're a Crystal Palace fan, another London team in the Premier League that will stay up again.
Yeah, I mean, one thing for that, though, if you're a Man United fan, the one thing I've been reading is that they are trying to shell off Anthony for a net loss, obviously. I mean, he's got one goal, one assist. But they're trying to get those funds to buy Olise, because as Sean mentioned, Man U's been their front runner for quite some time. And I know PSG just joined the conversation this week for him. But what do you guys think for an Anthony Olise swap? Would you do that 1-to-1 right now?
I would do the bag of chips for Anthony and then money for Olise for sure. But I don't think you're going to get much better than that. Olise's got 2 years left on his contract. It's open 2026. So the asking price to a regular club is going to be hefty. And the asking price to sell him to Manchester United is going to have that Man U tax on it. So it's going to have to be pretty substantial. But we'll see how the offseason goes. I mean, I'm getting to that point in the season where I'm really excited to see how it finishes, obviously, with Arsenal being in the position they are. But the prospect or the thought of being excited for the transfer window is now creeping in, too. I'm excited to see what Arsenal and the other teams in the league are going to do in the offseason, because that's a whole nother layer of excitement that if you follow the league religiously, you want to see these big names come in. You don't want to see us lose any big names. You want to see those rising stars get moved, shift around to like a Villa, to like a Spurs, you know, to an Arsenal that haven't won in a while or have never won in and are really pushing for something special. And that's what that transfer window is able to bring us. So we'll have a segment later on in the year regarding what we would like to see and the whole season wrap up. But as far as it goes for this week, I think we smoothly sail right into the rapid kicks and express acknowledgements for close games, top goals, and hot streak alerts. Kyle, why don't you take us to the first one? I think it's only rightfully so that it's you and Man City.
Yeah, I mean, me, Man City, and Erling Haaland. That was the story. Guy scored 4 goals. Awesome. Granted, 2 of them were from penalties, and he went the same way both times. A little bit of mind games there. I truthfully think that the second penalty should have been saved. The goalie guessed the right way. It it had some pace on it, but it wasn't in the corner. It was a pretty standard, hey, Haaland went left, goalie went left. You should make that save. Simple. But that being said, it was a pretty big slaughter on the hand of Man City. I mean, they held Wolves to 2 shots in the entire game and 1 on target compared to Man City's 20 shots and over 10 on target. So they're talking about 10% for Wolves there. They won in possession. They won in passes, pass accuracy. Once again, lost in yellow cards, which cuts deep. But other than that, they won everything. It was fun to watch. You know, it's hard to say that City is going to lose out any of these games at this point, which I'm excited for, but it's tough. I mean, you got to play teams like Fulham at home, and this is the Premier League. Any team can beat any team. This is as simple as I can say it. So at home, you are going to run into hiccups. It's just a matter of, can they keep their composure? Can Haaland actually perform? Because he got some big games left, and this has been the season of Haaland racking up his goal tally against teams that are mediocre, scoring hat tricks and 4 goals against Wolves, stuff like that. But when it comes to the big games, top four, he's not scoring. And he's not scoring in the Champions League. And he hasn't done that last year either, which gets me a little bit nervous about how reliable is Erling Haaland in the big moments. Granted, this will probably be the only podcast talking this week that is dogging Erling Haaland at all, because he just scored 4 goals and is leading the Premier League. But
I'm sure Roy Keane, if he had his own individual podcast, oh my God.
Oh, he can shove it up his ass. Fuck Roy Keane. I mean, God damn it. Talk about living your glory days. Move the hell on. Move to Florida. Do us all a favor.
Yeah, it gets harder and harder. The hope is really what kills you. And Sean, you said it, I think, last week. Our hope for Man City to lose a game was Spurs and West Ham, and Spurs and West Ham just got the fucking shit knocked out of them. So now I'm like, am I hanging my hat on fucking Fulham at Craven Cottage this weekend?
Do it to yourself, man. I've been there before. Don't do it to yourself.
No, at this point, I'm just watching Arsenal. I didn't even watch the Man City game this weekend. I just checked the scores because I can't cry for 90 to 115 minutes every weekend. It's a lot of tears. So moving along, the opposite of tears is pure joy. We do a double over Bournemouth this season. Arsenal beat Bournemouth 3-0. The scoreline, I would say, is just with the fact that Arsenal won. They dominated, I would say, about 75% of this game. Bournemouth, who have been in superior, fantastic form as of late, did have about a 15 to 20 minute run in the second half right at the start that they were in extremely, extremely good form. A couple unlucky calls. They had a goal called back. A truly fair scoreline probably would have been 3-1 to the Gunners still. But hey, this game and the acknowledgement goes out to Bukayo Saka, who becomes the first Arsenal player to reach 20 goals in all comps since Patrick Pierre Aubameyang in 2019-2020. He also, I believe, ties Ian Wright for the first Arsenal player to get up above 20 goal contributions since Ian Wright, an Englishman on Arsenal, that is.
Yep. So everybody got their favorite team this week on Rapid Kicks, and mine was Liverpool with a 4-2 victory over Tottenham, aided by a hot first half start. They were up 2-0 at the break, thanks to Mo Salah and Andrew Robertson goals. But the player of the match for me is clearly Harvey Elliott, assisted Cody Gakpo's third, and then scores for me the goal of the weekend with an absolutely stunning curler with his left foot into the top corner. Tottenham had a bit of a resurgence in the second half, but it was too little too late. They lose their fourth consecutive game for the first time in 20 years. So things are not exactly going swimmingly for big old Ange, mate.
No, and you can see his demeanor at interviews and post-game, you know, conferences. His demeanor is going down the tubes too. It's tough. You know, as an Arsenal fan, I love to see it. But as an English Premier League fan, in the beginning, when Spurs, remember that time where Spurs thought they were going to win the Premier
League? Let it go. Let it go.
Come on.
it's unfortunate.
Totteringham's Day was just last week.
St. Totteringham's Day.
Whatever that.
St. Totteringham's Day. It's been a whole week for us. Yeah. So go ahead, Kyle. What's next on our Rapid Kicks?
Next on the Rapid Kicks would be Newcastle absolutely curb-stomping Burnley. I mean, they put him in a blender. Granted, Burnley fought. I will say that. The final score does not show how Burnley played, I will say. It was 4-1, But Burnley mustered 17 shots, five of them on target, half the possession, half the passes. You know, they split the stats right down the middle. If you watch the game, it did not deserve to be 4-1. Granted, I do think Newcastle deserved to win it because there was a 35-minute span where Newcastle absolutely dominated football. There was no other way to put it. They scored four times with four different players. They were moving the ball like it was no one's business. So that's tough. You're new to the Premier League and you're playing a team that's in form, very good team, and they are hot for those half hour. And it just goes to show, you're in the Premier League, you cannot afford to sit on your heels for 10 minutes. You know, there's no point of a match that you can say, I'm going to just relax for a little bit because we got this in the bag. No. Bottom line, no. You're going to get destroyed every single time. But yeah. Hate to see it happen to Vincent Kompany. I mean, what a guy. What a player. I mean, charitable, handsome, just what a shame.
Well, you hate to see it if you're Vincent Kompany. You hate to see it if you're a Manchester United fan because that's a direct competitor for the final European spot for the Conference League. But one thing you kind of do and kind of don't like to see if you're a Manchester United fan is the fact that Brighton just beat Aston Villa 1-0. I say you don't like it because you still have to play Brighton, but Brighton could also be your saving grace because they have to play Newcastle and Chelsea, who are both competing for that final Conference League spot. So if you're Manchester United and you're able to beat Brighton, and then Brighton can come back into form and beat Chelsea and Newcastle, that's almost your only hope as a Manchester United fan in getting European soccer next year. But let's not take the bright spot away from Brighton. Brighton have had a struggling past couple of weeks, but they managed to squeak out a great victory over Aston Villa and climb back to 11th place thanks to that domination of Villa. Brighton had an XG of 2.53. And expected goals against, meaning the expected goals for Villa were only 2.5. Again, Simon Ndigra really showing his worth for the goals this season, a player to look forward to next year as well. So we're going to take a quick little break after those rapid kicks and head into the segment three, which is the weekend look ahead. We got a couple exciting games, and I would say at this point, everything matters, especially for a lot of the top of the table and the bottom of the table teams. So we'll go over what we are anticipating this weekend when we get back. Well, we all highlighted our teams during the rapid kicks, and we're all going to highlight our teams with this weekend look ahead because we're playing against teams that mean a lot, or we are a team that's playing for something extreme. And the first one we can kind of go over is Arsenal versus Manchester United. This is away for Arsenal at Old Trafford, where they were able to pick up a win, actually a dramatic tie last year. I can't even remember anymore. I think it was a dramatic tie because there was a goal disallowed that Udegaard was, you know, won the ball from Christian Eriksen halfway up the pitch, turned around, great through ball to Martinelli, and it was called back. So it resulted in a 1-point tie for Arsenal. So we're hoping to get a little revenge here and take advantage of this really poor form of Manchester United. Now, who will be fit for this game? I'm not really sure. But you know, this is going to be dramatic regardless because the first time we faced each other, Garnacho had a winner that was ruled out for offsides, and then Declan Rice won it in the death. And then I believe, Gabriel Jesus scored on top of that to make it 3-1. And that scoreline didn't really properly represent how that game went. But, you know, United having just one win against the big six opponents this year, being Chelsea in December, is promising. And Arsenal can only do what Arsenal can do, and that's win their games in hand. Put points on the board and continue to put pressure on Manchester City, who still have one extra game over the Gunners to play. So hopefully this game on Sunday at 11:30 will make all of our mothers out there very happy on Mother's Day with a W.
Yeah, everyone knows mothers love the Gunners. That's
everyone
true.
Loves That's the Gunners. It's something about the known. Red cannon. You know, it's just, you know, the Gunners.
Pause? Mother
loves. Whew. Yeah.
This is a PG podcast, man. Keep it pushing. Yeah. The one note I will have on this, just one win against a big six opponent this year for Manchester United. That was against Chelsea back in December when they were shit, not Chelsea when they were good. Chelsea just beat them a couple weeks ago. I also looked it up. Man U did win this fixture 3-1 last year, which feels absolutely impossible.
They won the fixture 3-1 last year?
Yeah. Antony and Rashford goals.
Yeah, Rashford was pretty early. I remember he cut into Anthony's the right one side. Goal? Yeah.
No, last year he wasn't that bad.
Nah, he scored against City with a left foot curler, which was gorgeous. But yeah, I'm telling you guys, look for Maguire to score this weekend. They don't win
if he's playing.
Score if he doesn't play, they don't win. Playing. I mean, he's, you know, the GOAT center back, so we got to watch out.
Yeah, Maguire is out for the remainder of the season with a muscle injury till early June. I don't know.
Dumbass.
Rashford's noted as an ankle injury for late May. Varane is doubtful. McTominay is doubtful. I mean, no real promise there. I think the only injury that Arsenal has right now is Timber. And he actually might feature on the bench for this matchup. So very exciting stuff. And we kind of go from there. But Sean, you want to take it to Liverpool next?
Yeah, and listen, we are certainly not in the title race like the two of your teams. However, our opponent, this game is very important and very relevant. Villa just need one win or a Spurs loss in their remaining games to qualify for the top four. Be the first time in the Premier League era that Aston Villa qualifies for the Champions League. They did win what was the European Cup and now is known as the Champions League back in 1982. So they obviously have some pedigree there. But this will definitely be a good one to watch. It looked like Liverpool got off the schneid. We know how good Villa are at home. But the first game between these teams was pretty lopsided. 3-0 victory for Liverpool in a very different circumstances back in the beginning of the season. So I'm interested to see how this one goes. I think this is probably going to be the best game just in terms of watch on the weekend, but perhaps they'll be proven wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great shout. Kyle, you want to talk strategy on how you're going to lose this weekend?
Sure. I mean, first thing I want to say is actually Liverpool related. I don't know if we touched upon it, but guys, if you haven't seen Harvey Elliott's goal yet this week, it's superb. It's as high class as you can come from that type of player. Well, a high level player. I'm not saying that type of player, but like it was a unbelievable strike with his left.
No, that bomb, Harvey Elliott. Harry Maguire.
Dude, whenever he's on the field, he's a bright point for you guys. 100%. I'm a big Elliott guy. But as far as City is concerned, this should be a win, which worries me. It's a lot of those type of games where Pep Guardiola starts going out there going, oh, this should be a win. So let's start these youngsters. And then, you know, the halftime substitutions are just not enough. So I think the saving grace here is that we actually are not in the Champions League. There is no reason to not play hard as you can for these last three games. So to go out there, win your game. It's Fulham. They lost a lot of their best players last year, so they've been struggling. I think this should be a walk in the park.
Yeah, just to ease your mind and then also ease my mind to not get my hopes up. Since 2010, November 2010, Fulham and Manchester City have met 18 times in the League Cup, FA Cup, or the English Premier League. Fulham have won 0 of those times.
Perfect.
Drawn 2 and lost 16.
Now, I know what you're doing. You're trying to throw it out there and put it in the air. So to get back at you, I'm going to go ahead and it is my lock of the week. I'm going to choose Arsenal. So
I already chose Manchester City as the lock of the week. So
what? All right, well, parlay them. City and Arsenal, lock of the week. Let's go.
How fucking horrible would that be if we both lost? And it's
what a shame. That would be open the door for Liverpool. I would be distraught to see that. If you guys lost all your games the rest of the way, me personally, it would just make me upset to no end.
You say with a shit-eating grin on your face. All right.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, 3 games left for you guys, 2 games left for the Gunners, and I believe it's still 2 games left for Liverpool too, right, John? So
yeah, Villa this week and Wolves next, and then the Klopp era ends, and my tears commence.
Yeah, but it's loot time, my man.
Sloot.
Bring in the sloot.
Yeah, I haven't seen someone like sloots this much since Christian was back at Rutgers, so...
Well, at least the scarlet red is around the same color-ish, I guess, for that. So maybe he'll convert after the season. But it is the final countdown. This will not be our last podcast. This will not be our second last podcast. Hold on to all your hopes because Of course, when the season is over, we'll have our year in review. We'll talk about all the exciting things that happen. Teams that met our expectations, exceeded our expectations, players specifically who lived up to their transfer fees, exceeded their transfer fees, or are ones that we're going to watch out for large transfer fees next year. So we'll have a lot of good content following the next couple of weeks. And don't give up hope out there for any of your teams. There's always something to fight for out there, whether it's a little bit more coin, like Kyle mentioned before, staying up in the Premier League or trying to win the Premier League. This is one of the hardest leagues in the entire world to win or just to be in. So there's always something to fight for. But until next week, everyone enjoy their weekends. Enjoy your Mother's Days for those who are able to celebrate. And we will talk to you guys next week. Until then, this is the EPL State of Mind signing off.
This is the Premier League signing off.